Welcome to Hashtag Finance Master, where Anders Leo Lindberg discusses the latest trends in finance and accounting.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Hashtag Finance Master Show. Here we tackle topics within trends in finance and accounting. And today is, they're all special, but it's special because we'll talk about the topic of AI, but not just from a general perspective, but here are some practical examples of how it's used in finance and accounting today. And for that, I have Steve Soder on the show. Steve is the vice president at Recyber, the AI-powered platform trusted by finance, accounting, sustainability, risk, and audit teams around the world. He's a former head of SEC reporting at Overstock with firsthand experience in navigating regulatory complexity, cross-functional collaboration, and now enterprise AI adoption in finance and accounting. Steve works closely with some of the world's most complex and regulated organizations, helping them gain real-time visibility into their data and streamline critical reporting processes. Steve, welcome to Hashtag Finance Master. Let's kick things off with your journey. How did you go from working with SEC reporting at Overstock and being a VP and controller at Backcountry to now being a VP at AI-powered platform like Recyber?
Well, it was certainly an interesting journey. So my journey at Workiva actually began as a customer. As you mentioned, in my career, I led teams in SEC reporting. That broadened a little bit to finance and accounting, later served as a controller with a global team, and had the opportunity to join Workiva, a company that I knew very well. I was familiar with SEC reporting and kind of the old way that we used to do it, where you actually used to mark up documents by hand, you would fax them over, they would then send you a typeset copy. It was very painful. And so when Workiva came along, it revolutionized the job. But for a lot of us at that time, it kind of revolutionized our lives simply because it made our work that much more efficient. I was a big fan of the company. And then based on years of being a customer and becoming familiar with the companies, they grew and the offerings, including some professional communities, I then had this unique opportunity to join. Today, I lead a team of experienced practitioners like myself that help collaborate on our strategy, on our product development, but are really focused mostly on helping our customers get the most value from our platform. As you mentioned, our platform serves sustainability, finance, and audit and risk professionals. We're AI powered. We help automate and facilitate the way data is exposed to AI to really help build confidence and clarity in the teams, in the work rather, that those teams are doing every single day.
Absolutely. And just curious at one point, because I used to work in industry or customer side as well, if you will, and then change to consulting. And for many people, it's kind of a challenging shift to make. So how was it going from the customer side to now on the, let's call it the vendor side, if you will? How's that change been for you?
Well, I make the joke that it's a lot easier to talk about accounting than actually do accounting. And in my job, I actually have the benefit of being able to stay close to a profession that I loved. I sincerely loved accounting. I actually, oddly enough, I started in school studying marketing. And then, of course, in order to get into the program, you have to take introductory accounting classes. And I immediately knew that accounting is the direction that I wanted to go in. And I really do love it. I love SEC reporting. I love technical accounting, where you're going to analyze a contract and then you're going to kind of put together an accounting memo, for example. But to me, the best part about this job and the thing that I enjoy the most is being able to help these teams with these really complex problems, because the work that I describe is difficult, it's tough, and it's actually really fulfilling and makes me feel like in a small way, I guess I'm kind of giving back to the profession in order for us to be able to help make that work much simpler, because the work is tough, it's risky, reputations are staked on it. And I just love being able to help these teams. So that's a really fun part of my job.
No, and I would say it's great there are people like you out there, right? Because navigating the complexities of reporting today is just, I'm sure even myself being a finance professional is finding a complete headache. So I'm sure you finding it fun is just, this is really great, right? Because we do need people that can help us take care of this. So kind of on that note, you work with some of the world's most complex and regulated organizations. And of course, beyond cost pressure, what's really driving serious AI adoption in finance and accounting right now?
Well, I think on a practical standpoint, what's driving it is mandates from the board. And I think at the board level, there's real opportunity to drive efficiency, to bring the best part of people's experience and perspectives out into the work and maybe minimize some of the mundane, more routine, less value add type of work. So I think that's one part of it. I think in practice, there's a little bit of FOMO, fear of missing out. There's this kind of big AI thing. Everybody's excited about it. But what's interesting about that, and I heard our chief information officer use this analogy last week, and I loved it. There's that FOMO, but then there's also FOBO, F-O-B-O, fear of becoming obsolescent. Fear of becoming...
obsolete, I guess.
Yeah, obsolete. Thank you. For some reason, it was on the tip of my tongue. Yeah, there's that fear of becoming obsolete. And that's a really interesting juxtaposition of these two positions, running after something, but then maybe that fear of, okay, well, where is this going to lead and what will this mean to my job? And that, I think, is a big part of at least how we're thinking about AI at Workiva is we don't want to replace humans. No, as I said, what we want to do is be able to empower them to get the most out of them. So, for example, you know, in accounting, one of the things that I loved, as I mentioned, was being able to look through a contract, be able to kind of pick out those things and then be able to help work through the subjective accounting determinations. Well, if I could have AI go through and take a first pass at that, for example, and at least get me started, that's going to get me to that end point quicker of where I'm doing the highest value work. And I think if people think about it that way, that fear of becoming obsolete, I think really goes away. And then they start to think about it more opportunistically as opposed to something that represents risk.
Yeah, and maybe we can just stay a little bit on that. And we'll get back to it later in the podcast as well. But, you know, changing mindsets and changing ways of working, changing behaviors, it's just one of the most difficult things when you talk about transformation. And, you know, as a technology provider, you will probably see this every day as well. So what are you kind of doing to help the practitioners out there change their ways of working and embracing these new tools, which undoubtedly will, like you say, help them do better work. But if you have that FOBO, then, you know, how do you help them go through the change?
Well, I think that when these customers and these practitioners are able to get real value in the day-to-day jobs in real and meaningful ways, that does change the paradigm again from becoming less about avoiding risk of becoming obsolete and more about being opportunistic, about being empowered and enabled to contribute in higher value and higher order ways. I think part of that discussion, though, is how do I start to have meaningful impact to core business processes and not just cool stuff that AI can do? And you know, I would assume that most everyone listening has experimented with some kind of generative AI tool and have been able to do some really neat, interesting things. Maybe they've done deep research on planning a trip. I actually did that this summer, and I was astounded. It was really helpful. It talked about when I should fly in and, you know, renting a car and where I should go and kind of how to structure it. It was amazing. That would have taken me hours to do that. That's cool. And that's fringe. And I guess, or I'd say that's cool. And you could argue that that's probably core to what I was looking for. But I think rather than accounting and finance and sustainability and audit risk professionals, I think instead of thinking up the coolest, neatest things that they can do to get back to that kind of higher order and higher level work, how can they use AI to really make an impact on the core part of their jobs every single day, some of which might be really mundane? I'll give you an example. One of the ways that we see AI being used in really powerful ways for our customers is in the audit and risk space, where they're having a conversation, let's doing a walkthrough, let's say for control testing, for example, or evaluating a control environment. Well, you can start to feed in the notes and the transcript into AI, and AI can actually start to like, well, hey, this might be a risk, or this might be an opportunity, or this might be a control that we could design. That's incredible work. I mean, that's something that no auditor really wants to do, like diagramming a flowchart. Are you kidding me? Who wants to do that? But then being able to take a step back and say, hey, I was able to get this, you know, drafted flowchart as an example within seconds. Now I can spend my time figuring out whether or not it's right and how we could actually adopt that to improve a process. I think when people have that kind of experience, again, it becomes a much more opportunistic discussion as opposed to avoiding the risk of losing my job.
I completely hear you. And I think, you know, like with anything, once you see it in action, what it can do for you, then you're much more likely to say, okay, you know, I can actually get time for all the work I never really had time for. Because, you know, when we talk to finance teams, you know, the biggest excuse they have is that they are time poor. And of course, that excuse has been the same for the past decades, I would say. But now with AI, it's becoming real and tangible that they would not necessarily be time poor anymore, at least not have that as an excuse for not doing more value-adding work. So it makes a lot of sense. Kind of staying on that, because we all know about the hype with AI, but from your vantage point, what do you think finance teams are actually ready for today, and what's still a few steps away?
I think that I'll start with the second part of your question. I think what's a few steps away is fully autonomous, fully agentic, and there's really a spectrum if you want to think about like non-agentic AI all the way to fully agentic AI. I think we're a ways away from the autonomous, fully agentic AI. And the reason why I say that is because one of the things that these professionals are going to be hesitant to do is rely on AI to enforce control environments, to be able to go in and perform some of the review and the approval and those types of things. And I'm not even sure if auditors right now, when they're looking at internal controls over financial or sustainability reporting, I don't think they're going to be comfortable with AI taking over. That I think is going to be a ways away. There's a whole discussion about, well, how do you audit that if you even were to trust on that becoming fully autonomous? What would be the audit procedures around that? So I think that's going to be a ways away. What I do think that they're ready for, as I said, though, are the manual, tedious kind of collaboration preparation and creation of all of the things that need to be done in order for them to begin that high value work, combining data, putting it in a format that's going to be useful for some kind of analysis. And to me, I think those are things that people are doing right now. I mean, we recently commissioned a practitioner survey and actually saw a pretty noticeable increase in percentages of practitioners across audit risk, financial reporting, sustainability, who are using AI as a regular part of their jobs. So what that tells me is that they are seeing, they're testing, they're experimenting. There's some challenges I think that they're facing as they do that. But it certainly tells me that people aren't like taking a step back to see this as being something scary that they're hesitant to try to adopt.
I think that makes a lot of sense, Steve. So I went to a conference of another big tech provider back in May, and they also had some of their customers on stage, and kind of being able to go backstage with them as well and ask them, you know, questions about how things are really working for them. Because of course, you know, the vendor was kind of showcasing the latest in AI that they could do, but when you then ask the customer, so, you know, what's actually happening with you? Is the data quality okay? No, not so much. So if you can kind of talk about the data issue, because that also goes back to, you know, controls and everything else. How are customers that you're working with, how are they ensuring that the data quality is good enough to actually start using the AI that's available? Because if the data is bad, then the AI is also going to be producing bad outcomes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love that question, and I'll get back to that survey. So this survey, there was over 2,300 global practitioners who are involved in this work at reasonably sized companies. And 2/3 of the practitioners said that they lacked high quality data to use within AI. Now, what that tells me most likely then is that they were probably using some off-the-shelf AI tool and were then struggling to be able to kind of feed the right data into that tool in order to, you know, do the job that they were asking AI to do. And so the way that we think about that, well, first of all, I mean, anybody who's done some kind of technology implementation should be aghast. You had 2/3 of the people saying that, hey, I don't actually have the right data to be feeding into this tool that I am then going to presumably rely on for some kind of initial analysis or, you know, some type of work product. I mean, again, that should scare everybody. I think the way that we are thinking about it is rather than these kind of off-the-shelf generic AI models is to be able to go back to, okay, what's the core technology that I am using where my data is already in that technology? It already has access to the data that's governed and it's secure that I can trust, you know, what the AI is going to be doing with it. What we are seeing is customers starting there, and I say customers because that's how Workiva approaches it, but even speaking more broadly, I think particularly within finance and sustainability and risk, we're going to see these more specialized AI tools being used because of that whole data question. I mean, I do think there might be a temptation for a CIO to be thinking about AI in the biggest and broadest sense at the enterprise level. And I think the challenge with that is that while it sounds good on the surface, it does open up some real questions about data permissioning, data accessibility, and then the specialized use cases that apply to specialized professions, whether that's financial reporting or maybe that's legal or HR. To me, I think that we see people focusing more on the specificity simply because the benefits that they are getting from the tool are so much greater than what they could get from some generic off-the-shelf tool. And I think the survey results and the sentiment that you're having, or that you're hearing rather, confirms that.
I'm fully aligned with that, and basically just mirrors the advice I typically give to companies, because like you're talking about the FOMO in the beginning, right? So they're all thinking we need to do something with AI. And I'm like, well, of course you can start building your own solutions and use, whatever GPT is available out there. And even if you have the private version so you can load their data, it's still not as good as collaborating with the tech vendors you already have and using the AI solutions that they're, you know, bound to get if it's not already there. Because, you know, if you work with it within your existing ecosystem, like you said, Steve, it's just going to be so much easier and so much more trustworthy to use it rather than trying to build pilots of some external stuff on the side, which, you know, you're going to spend a long time to gain trust. And of course, it's not going to be as efficient as just using the tools that are available. And I think people understand that. But then, you know, and I'm not saying that goes for McKeever, but of course, then there are some vendors that say, you know, we have an AI solution, but then do they really when you scratch the surface and so on? So there's still a bit of doubts and hesitations out there if that approach can work. But what do you see with your customers? Are they like, hey, we're ready to jump on board with whatever you offer? Or are they also a bit skeptical about how to use some of these AI solutions?
Well, let me get to that in just a quick second. I just had a follow-up point because I actually heard it on this show, and I think it was an episode earlier this year, and I apologize, you may have said it, or maybe it was one of the guests, but they said, AI by itself is not a strategy. You have another strategy for some important thing that you're doing. Then the question is, okay, how do we use AI in order to help us get there? And I thought, I mean, yes, I can see in some version, if I'm a CEO, then I need to have an AI strategy at the top of the house. But I think when it comes to the practical application, the way that it was described, I love that. And I think it's actually right at the heart of what we've been talking about. Now, as far as answering your question, I think one of the challenges that customers and practitioners are having with AI is actually getting through, I mean, I feel terrible for them because these can be painful processes, but actually getting through internal approvals, whether that's with IT, whether that's with legal or with others. Again, it actually reinforces the point that we were talking about earlier about leveraging the existing technology where you've already been through that process. And I think a lot of that depends on the industry in which they're at. You have smaller companies, maybe less regulated companies where, you know, they can kind of run and chase after AI a little more aggressively. You have others like, you know, financial services is an example. You know, while we do have customers that are on the leading edge of AI who are in financial service industry, some of them are really struggling about some of the data permissioning and security. Of course, there's a whole conversation about, you know, customer information that doesn't really apply to Workiva, but outside of Workiva, I know those things are being talked about. And so what we really see is a bit of a mix, and a lot of that is boiling down to that internal adoption process. We recently put together a white paper, as it were, on kind of building a business case. You know, these are like steps that you would take and processes, and, you know, could certainly recommend that to the readers. But outside of that, I do think that there's some internal adoption because it's not just your audience that's struggling with this, right? I mean, this is everybody struggling with this organization-wide as teams and companies set strategy, as they start to see how this is actually benefiting them as it gets adopted, and then figuring out, okay, how are we going to fit this into our core business processes in ways that are going to have the protection and the risk mitigation that we need while still being able to drive meaningful value? I think we're in this messy adoption process right now.
No, I think that makes sense, and it's fair, I guess, you know, the whole AI wave. Of course, we've talked about AI for a long time, but it's really when ChatGPT came aboard that it really kind of lit the fire and everyone that said, okay, now we need to do something. And I, by the way, I love that you pulled out that quote from an earlier episode this year. I think I repurposed that because I like 5, 7, 10 years ago, I can't remember how long ago, I said about not AI, but about digital transformation, that digital transformation not a strategy. It's something that enables your strategy. And now you can just replace digital transformation with AI, but it's kind of the same situation around it. That if you don't, you know, you have to have a sound business strategy. And then find out how AI can support that. Maybe you want to reduce cost and AI can help you get efficiencies. Maybe you want to, you know, do a lot more insights about the market you're at. AI can help you, but AI is not your strategy. So really appreciate you pulling that one out. You spoke a little bit about financial services, for instance, but are there certain industries or types of finance teams that are adopting AI faster than others? And if there is, what's kind of behind that difference?
So I think that really boils down to data accessibility. I do think those industries that are more prone to adopting AI more quickly have access to data. They have access to good data, data that has been relevant for decision making. You know, I could use an example outside of financial services, online retail. If you think about somebody buying something on a website, for example, you know where they were looking, you know what they clicked, something gets added to a cart, it gets removed to a cart, you know the ad that was brought in, you can then look at, okay, here's when the order was placed. This is when it went to the credit card processor. This is when it went to fulfillment. Here's actually when it was delivered. You can take this massive data set and start to really stitch that together in some really meaningful, powerful ways. That might be very different from, let's say, a service provider who may not be collecting a lot of data along the way and may not exactly have all those data points where they can start to leverage AI. I say that really broadly outside of you know, the customers that we serve here at Workiva. To talk specifically, though, now about who is adopting AI with respect to finance, sustainability, and audit risk, I think what we see are those companies that have actually developed a strategy, who have actually set some guardrails around, hey, these are the risks that we're willing to take. These are the risks that we are not willing to take. And we've now opened up, I say that in air quotes, we've now opened up some technology in order for people to start to experiment. And I realize that sounds fairly self-evident. If a company is willing to go through all that, then of course they're doing that because they can adopt new technology. But I think it's a real skill set and it's actually been a real challenge for companies to be able to figure out a way to embrace it in a meaningful, relatively risk-free way, as opposed to just, you know, opening up and saying, okay, everybody go and experiment. I mean, that would be a complete disaster. It takes a lot of effort to think about how to adopt a technology as transformative as AI. And those companies that started thinking about a long time ago who have built up the muscle memory as it was, I think are now starting to reap the benefits. I think the other thing that I would point out is that for companies who are doing this successfully, they figured out the change management aspect of it. Because change management, I think with AI is actually continuous. It's not like we identify a new ERP, for example, that we want, you know, we implement, we train on it, and then we're going to use it for the next, you know, decade plus. That is not happening with AI. You have this real-time change management process that is going again and again and again. And if you don't get it right, you've got employee burnout. I think you've got other risks that are along with that. And being able to wrap your head around that organizationally, I think we'll actually have a flywheel effect of allowing people to get increasingly more benefits from AI rather than going through it once, getting burned out, and then not being as aggressive on adoption as maybe they otherwise would be.
So a couple of points comes to mind, Steve. The first is around, you said that not everyone should just get access to play around with AI however they want. And that kind of reminds me of dashboarding, because, you know, with the democratization of data, suddenly everyone got access to dashboards, whether it was a Microsoft product or others, doesn't really matter. And then you just saw what I have termed the dashboard explosion, where you had like big companies, thousands of dashboards going on, and no one really knowing what to use one or the other dashboard for. So this whole information overflow just had the absolute negative or opposite effect of what you were trying to achieve with actually democratizing data, which is giving access to what people need to see in order to make better decisions. But suddenly they had 5 dashboards and didn't really know what to do with it. And you could easily see the same thing with AI, where basically, you know, you could be thrown 5 different GPTs at you every single week from different people experimenting with things. You're like, And I don't even know how to add up one of them. So what am I going to do? And I'm completely overloaded with this, this all these GPTs or other AI solutions for an. So that's kind of the one point. The other point I wanted to say is you talked about maybe the application in industries and companies a bit more broadly. But I spoke to a former head of advanced analytics at Uber and before that iTunes, talking about data-rich companies. He also talked about how they used AI or maybe some simpler form of it to analyze all the trip data they had available, or you know how people interact with iTunes to make sure that they put the right products on display. So just to emphasize the point that data-rich companies is really where you need to start reaping those benefits, whereas others, where it's maybe a bit more messy, could be a bit more challenging. So just to add those points. So maybe to make it very tangible, could you maybe walk us through a real example of how a team that used the Workiver's AI to accelerate a report or a deliverable, and what kind of changed in their workflow?
Yeah, so I'll go back to audit and risk. To me, I think that's a terrific use case. So what we'll see is companies beginning to use AI in order to start to kind of be like this separate teammate while they're doing this other work. And I mean, this might be an overly simplified example, but imagine yourself having a discussion with somebody in your operations team, and you're talking about risk and you're asking questions. Imagine this sort of person that's kind of like sitting over here to the side, who's taking notes of every single word that is said, analyzing every single phrase and starting to draw connections like, well, if this must be true, then we should think about that. Or, hey, you mentioned this at the beginning and then you mentioned that at the end, and now I'm starting to draw a parallel. Where we see companies getting the most value, and again, I'm using audit and risk as an example, is being able to leverage AI while they're doing the work that they already would have, doing the work that they otherwise would be doing anyway. That example of having a discussion, maybe you're on a walkthrough, for example, is a really, really good one, to where I could be assessing risks, I could be diagramming workflows, I could be making suggestions of controls, I could even be thinking of ways that I could test those controls in the future. That is a real specific example of the way that customers are using Workiva day to day. Again, I'm using audit and risk. But you might have a different separate example. So let's say you're in financial reporting, you're in sustainability reporting, and you're writing a new disclosure. You know, maybe if you're in sustainability, you know, there's some new carbon mitigation methodologies, for example, that you're starting to deploy. Or if you're in financial reporting, let's say maybe there's a new transaction. As you're starting to go through and collect and feed the information, you can have AI be looking at what would be the regulated requirements for disclosure. What would my peers be disclosing? What other connections should I be making in this disclosure relative to other things that I have said, either in a press release or maybe even within the same document? Those things can be happening real time just by virtue of you doing your work within the platform. And that's how we see companies gaining real benefits from AI. And back to an earlier point that we had talked about that human-centric or, you know, leveraging the highest value work. When these team members start to see the value that they're getting by leveraging existing technology, by leveraging that technology for existing processes, but then have this AI as like a separate teammate saying, well, hey, did you think about this? And here's a recommendation, and there's a recommendation. Again, to me, that has this flywheel effect of accelerating the adoption of the benefit of AI, because it's real and it's not replacing them. It's augmenting them again as almost like another teammate. We see that happening more and more and more with our customers. And as I said, it is so exciting because it's changing the work for those companies that are getting it right.
No, and it's exactly like you said, Steve, it's an additional assistant or teammate, right? So it kind of made me think about when the RPA first started coming out with robotic process automation. And you, of course, in the beginning, people were a bit like hesitant, just like with AI or assistants right now. But then they started to call them names like Bob or Sue or whatever, right? So Bob is performing this task and Sue is performing that task. And I guess we see the same thing with these assistants now, right? They get names and they're becoming part of the team. And it's more and more natural that, you know, sometimes you work with other humans, sometimes you work with AI. Of course, sometimes it gets a bit comical where you see, you know, longer email exchanges where you can see it's one GPT talking to the other and it's feeding, you know, response, and then it's giving another response, right? But at the end of the day, you know, if it makes things more efficient, if it gets better output and outcomes, then so be it. At some point, like you talked about earlier, I think that maybe auditors and maybe company executives were maybe a bit hesitant about giving full control of stuff to AI. So there will still be that human oversight. And I think that's really important to remember, not just for, you know, heavy regulated industries or complex reporting like SEC reporting, but I think for the most things where we use AI, we should still remember that human oversight. And it kind of, you know, a simple example, speaking about holidays, you mentioned also earlier. So we also used it, or I used the ChatGPT for our holiday, and we're going to Venice in Italy. And then we were thinking about, okay, where to park. And I kind of got some suggestions for it. Then my wife, she's really big on researching herself and Googling and whatnot. So she also did her own research, and we kind of compared, and she came, okay, we should use this specific parking lot, which I thought maybe was a bit risky, but of course it was much cheaper. And then by the time she said, okay, we're going to use this parking lot, I then fed it back to the GPT and it said, oh, that's a great choice, right? So it kind of just gives you a bit what you want to try to please you, whereas sometimes we need to apply a bit more critical sense. So kind of staying a bit on that, you know, speaking of course about AI, but how is it reshaping day-to-day responsibilities for finance professionals on the one end and then auditors on the other end? And what new skills are becoming more important for them to master?
I think the way that it's shaping day-to-day responsibilities is a natural question that executives and boards are asking on whether or not that work, or what percentage of that work could now be done by AI. And I think a lot of this is coming out in headcount discussions. So let's say, for example, I have requested new headcount for an analyst. A natural question that is going to come is like, hey, is there other work that could be done by AI that might mean that new head isn't necessary, or other work in other teams or other places to where we could start to offset, you know, that new additional head? I don't think that people or boards have these mandates for cutting heads, but I do think the pressure for additional headcount the pressure to mitigate additional headcount, I think, is going to be real because of the benefits of AI. And to answer your question about how that's changing day to day, I think that's kind of slow moving. I mean, people, you know, probably shouldn't be turning over heads like all day and all the time. But as that process starts to go on, I do think that's going to have this natural effect of pushing AI further and further and deeper into places where it makes sense. And we've already talked about the use cases and specific ways in which that could help. Now getting, I think, to the audit side, to me, that's particularly interesting. It's actually one of the things that we think about a lot at Workiva, because by nature of the work that we're doing, our work is going to be subject to audit, both internal and external. And some of that assurance work actually happens within our platform. And we know that some of that work is going to happen by external auditors using not just the data in our platform, but that audit work is going to happen separately. And I think that's where it becomes really, really important for you to be able to understand how AI made the determinations, how it aggregated the data, what data it used, and what did it do with that data. I think that audit trail, as it were, for exactly how the AI is working is going to become increasingly important, because I think today in this world where we may not have audit standards for fully autonomous AI, I mean, we kind of do, but there's certainly a lot of work to be done there. I think auditors are going to go back and say, well, look, I don't care if it was AI doing it or if it was a human, my audit procedures actually remain the same. And so what I don't think is going to work is for teams to start putting data into this AI black box and then getting an answer and then being unable to respond to the auditors when they say, okay, well how did AI come with that answer? And it's like, well, I don't know. This is just what I got. That that's not going to work. No. And so I think purpose-built AI, again, when we talked about specialized tools, purpose-built AI for these practitioners is going to mean that audit trail that says, here's where the data came from. This is exactly what I did with it. These were the, you know, data points or the principles that I was using to, you know, make my determination. And these are recommendations, for example, of, you know, how I think this process could be improved. And, you know, then an auditor could sort of like take all of those things and then be able to work that on their existing audit procedures. I think that's going to become the gold standard. It's certainly the way that we're thinking about AI for our own customers.
That's good to hear, Stephen, just to get some more, you know, tangible examples on how things are going to work. And I kind of, you know, just a follow-up question then, because I think it was can't remember if PwC or someone else, more than a decade ago, they published this study around, you know, which professions are most likely to get automated completely. And of course, auditors and accountants, they're sitting up there with like 97 or 99%. Yet today, you know, we have a huge talent shortage in the US, for sure, for CPAs and accountants and auditors, I could imagine as well. And companies are struggling to find talent. So, you know, with AI, of course, coming in, but you also saying there's kind of a, you know, a few steps at least until we get to autonomous agentic AI. How do you see this whole talent shortage play out versus the capabilities of AI, at least in the short to midterm?
Well, like you, I wish I had a crystal ball. So probably anything that I say is probably going to be wrong, at least to some extent. But I think directionally, you have a couple of things happening. I think you have this existing shortage of talent to where we're not even at steady state, let's just say, to where, you know, incoming is the same as outgoing and we're kind of balanced. We're not even there yet. And I don't suspect the AI is going to fill that gap, at least anytime soon. So I think we kind of need to disabuse ourselves of the notion that AI is going to like fill this this talent shortage that we're feeling. What I do think is going to happen, though, is that, as I said, by that pressure from the board on additional headcount, by the natural shifting of work that's moving these more manual tasks to being done by AI as opposed to humans, what I do think that's going to do is to begin to level up the work that these teams are doing all day, every day. And that, I think, is going to change the way that these professionals are educated, the way that they're originally trained, because, you know, like you and I came in to the practical. I started an audit, but then I came into, well, here's how you book a journal entry, and these are the accounts to use, and here's how you process it through the system. That kind of stuff, I think, goes away. And one of the things that the profession really hasn't answered yet is, what does that training look like? Because whereas, you know, you and I grew up in a world that where AI wasn't part of our training, and we didn't come into it where AI was, you know, fully operational, the future professionals will, and they are going to need the skills that you and I and other seasoned professionals have in order to be able to look at an analysis or look at a determination, say, you know what, this seems off, or I see the process that you took, and I think there might be some gaps here, here, and here. I'm not sure what that additional training looks like, to be completely honest, but I do know that that will be addressed or has to be addressed in order for us to continue to leverage this. Because the work that these teams are doing, it has to be right. There's too much regulatory risk. There's too much stakeholder risk for it to be wrong. And again, I just don't see a world where stakeholders are willing to accept an additional amount of risk because we put it into this AI black box and now we're just willing to trust it. That's not a world that I think will ever come to pass. And so that training aspect, I think, is something that we absolutely need to figure out. And candidly, I don't know what the answer is, but I do know that that's being talked about a ton because I think everybody sees it coming.
I think that this is a real critical point, right, Steve? You talked in the beginning about it's easier to talk about accounting than actually do accounting. And I completely echo that, right? So, you know, I also came in and had to learn to do journal entries, and I was horrible at it despite having started finance and accounting in business school, right? So it was only when I became a finance manager and had two accountants under me, we had to sit and actually do the things into the ERP system, that I kind of learned it, right? But today, those opportunities are not really there for professionals. So, you know, how do they actually learn to do real accounting so they can question it? And I don't have the answer, just, you know, like you do, but I think it's a real issue to tackle, right? Because we're not ready to just hand it over to AI completely yet. So thanks for that discussion. And I appreciate that we don't have all the answers here on this show. Maybe others can then respond afterwards to this out there in the big wide world. You know, okay, one thing is we know AI, we know what we can use it for, but companies still need to be able to implement it. So what are some of the biggest roadblocks that you see when companies try to implement AI in financial processes, and how do the most successful teams overcome it?
The three things that I would point out there, and we've already talked about one of them, which is the lack of data quality. The other is AI governance. And the third is AI training. Those, and this was confirmed by that practitioner survey that I mentioned earlier. Those to me are the biggest roadblocks to adoption that we're seeing out in the market. We've already talked about AI or high quality data being used for AI. You know, we can talk about AI governance. I think the challenge there is that it's really easy for a legal or a risk or compliance team to just shut it down completely and say, well, hey, no, we're just not going to do it. Or any AI that we use, we're actually going to develop internally. And there's some challenges with that that we could get into if you like. But I think more broadly speaking, that over-governed notion, I think, is actually hampering teams from being able to have a real impact. So then you have this kind of mandate from the board, as we talked about, but then you have, again, legal or a risk or compliance team saying, hey, no, we're going to shut it down. To me, I think you're kind of setting it up for a little bit of a catastrophe. Teams are struggling with that. The other and the third that I mentioned is AI, is training, meaningful training on artificial intelligence. And if you go back to the survey, actually, both from a training, governance, and high-quality data, it's actually two-thirds of teams report that they don't have it. I mean, I'll echo what I said earlier. When I saw those stats, I was aghast. I mean, could you imagine implementing like a new ERP and only a third of the people who are using it would be properly trained? I mean, like, that's a recipe for disaster. Yeah. So I think the challenges in implementation, which therefore become the opportunities for implementation, largely reside in those three things. The other, this is a little more anecdotal, is that we hear, I hear out in the market, companies talking about this sort of value hypothesis that they thought that they were going to get from AI, and there being a delta between the value realization. To me, I think that's natural with any kind of technology.
Yeah.
But I think what ends up happening is that, let's say you have this hypothesis of value is going to add, the actual value wasn't as great, and then you take a step back and like, okay, well, that didn't work. I guess we're going to go back to the status quo. There's a change management aspect, again, as we talked about, of being able to say, okay, why didn't we get the value that we wanted? And then now what would we need to do in the future, you know, in order to actually get that realization? That's an ongoing process. But I think that takes some real effort and some muscle memory organizationally for teams to continue to go through that. So again, that's a little more anecdotal. We didn't ask about that specifically in the survey. I do hear a lot about that in the market. So I would add that as a fourth challenge to adoption and implementation, but also an opportunity along the same lines.
Well, I think the fourth point is also great. And of course, we need to be realistic with AI, just like we should be realistic with any kind of project, right? But if you put together a business case and you know a lot, which maybe you know about your core business, the likelihood of you being able to hit that value realization more closely to your business case is higher. Whereas with AI, you can imagine a lot of things and you can think a lot of things, but we don't really know. So we probably need to be willing to accept a lot higher variance on that value realization versus the business case. And of course, the boards and executives are not willing to do that. It's of course going to put that company back months or years even in the adoption race. So I think that's a great point you added there, Steve. So kind of staying on that topic between AI and humans and how do we get most out of it, how can CFOs and other senior leaders strike a balance between leveraging AI for efficiency and effectiveness for that matter as well, and ensuring that humans stay in the loop for where it's critical for decision making?
I think that when you look at the role of the CFO in particular, because that's one that I think is really it's really challenging to be a CFO today, at least in my opinion. To me, the right place to set broader AI strategy, and again, we'll go back to our earlier discussion about, well, is AI really a strategy or is that a means to accomplish a strategy? I think CEOs need to be setting the North Star. They're the go-between ultimately between the board and business leadership and the way that things are run. Assuming that that's the case, then it falls on CEOs, CIOs, and others within their functional areas to really think about, okay, if this is the North Star, then how am I actually going to put that into practice? And with CEOs, it's different because it's not just about running an efficient and effective finance and accounting and risk organization. Well, it's also about ensuring that the benefits or the values that we expect to get from AI or anything that we're doing for that matter are going to be realized. And that might manifest itself in increased revenue or decreased expenses or perhaps a limited risk exposure. You know, maybe we're going to get smarter about the way that we think about impact from a sustainability standpoint. But that's why I say the job of CFOs is tough because they have to think about both. And I think that CFOs who go further down and deeper into the organization to start actually getting into the weeds on maybe not quite a use case by use case, but really get in and understand these are the opportunities that we could use for AI that still accomplish what we need from a risk exposure standpoint, that are still going to keep our data protected, that are still going to be available and accessible for, you know, a broad set of employees so that we can start to get benefits at scale. I think CFOs really need to get down into the details and start to understand that in a way that, frankly, they haven't needed to. I mean, you don't have many CFOs spending a lot of time in the ERP, right? Like pulling reports, trial balances, or whatever. And I'm not suggesting that CFOs do that. But I do think that when it comes to these use cases and adoptions, it's going to behoove those executives to get further down in the details, because that's going to allow them to answer questions to inevitable questions they're going to get from both CEOs as well as the boards, and really help them understand, hey, I've been in it and I've used it. Here's how this tech is working. Here's how it's not working. And these are the opportunities for us.
Yeah, and perhaps also remember that boards and CEOs are educated themselves as well, same time that CFOs are doing that. So you can't just, you know, get away with a very high level generic answers. You really need to know what's going on and what's possible to kind of be convincing that this is the way to go and to invest more in this. Whereas, you know, for standard financial matters, any CFO any day could answer any question probably. With AI, it's just not like that. So I fully agree that they need to insert themselves at a bit more deeper level to understand what is the potential of this, not just from a theoretical perspective, but from a real perspective in their daily business. So that's a great point there, Steve. So final question. So on the Hashtag Finance Master show, we define a finance master as someone who helps build world-class finance functions. So Steve, how does your work at Workiva contribute to that vision?
If you look at the job that these teams are doing every day, and we'll use finance as an example, the job was difficult in 2019. And I'm using 2019 specifically on purpose. Of course, you'll see why, and probably already see where this is going. Digital transformation, talent shortages, optimizing a finance function. That was difficult up until you had COVID, you had supply chain disruptions, you had inflation, you had regulatory changes. Those things that we have seen in recent years have only compounded the challenges that these teams have faced all along. And at Workiva, what we're trying to think about is, how do I drive transparency? How do I drive performance? And how do I drive trust in meaningful ways that gives teams access to the data that they need and data that they can trust, that leverages the power of AI to do the work that will allow humans to be able to do the highest value order work possible? And then how do I do that at scale so that organizations, not just individual team members, but teams and broader organizations can start to get the flywheel effect of collaboration, shared access to data, and ultimately shared and aligned outcomes to which they are being held accountable? I can't think of an environment that where this has ever been more important and where this has ever been more needed. That is exactly what we're accomplishing for our customers at Workiva. And that's why I would say we can be finance masters.
No, that's great to hear, Steve. And as I said in the beginning, it's great to have people like you out there that are really crunching on these perhaps more technical topics that many would struggle deeply with, even if they have studied finance and accounting. So I really appreciate that. Steve, what's the best way to get in touch with you or the team at Workiva? And maybe also, how do I get that survey that you've been referencing? Because it sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn. It's just my name, Steve Soder. You could certainly send me a message if you would like. I am happy to provide a practitioner survey as well, but all of that can be found at our website, workiva.com. It's called the 2025 Practitioner Survey. You could go to the website and get it right now.
Excellent. Steve, thanks a lot. It's been a pleasure to get all your immense knowledge about what's going on out there right now with AI in finance and accounting, hearing some real examples, hearing what you guys are doing at Workiva. Truly a pleasure, and we spoke maybe for a bit longer than we usually do, but I just wanted to make sure we got all the insights. So thanks a lot for being on the show.
Thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.
Great. And thanks to all the listeners out there as well on the Hashtag Finance Master Show. My name is Anders Liu Lindberg, and I've been your host, like I've always been. And we will see you, or you can hear us again next week. And we certainly look forward to that. So bye for now, everyone.
You've been listening to Hashtag Finance Master. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest trends in finance and accounting.